And a very good morning to you. It's John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group back with you for another program of The Law and You here on 4CRB. As always, your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 9:30. And for the very first time this year, that's 10:30 Queensland or Daylight Saving Time for New South Wales. So if you have a question or a query, get on that telephone straight away. 55208888 is the number. That's 55208888. And speaking of daylight saving time, if you live south of the Tweed River, don't forget you need to put 07 in front of our phone number. You can send questions by email to talkback@4crb.com. And it's certainly great to be back after a week's break. And the great thing about it was that while I was away, I was able to listen to 4CRB on what Barry Coleman refers to as the World Wide Wireless. And I was just amazed at how well it works. It's the first time I've ever used it. And it was fantastic, particularly because I just happened to be in the right spot at the right time to be able to listen to my colleagues Dan O'Connor and Tom Trembath present The Law and You last week in my absence. And certainly a very interesting program from my perspective. And it was great to see that they were getting all those calls coming through, which was extremely pleasing. 55208888 is the number for today's program. That's 55208888. If you get on that telephone right now, you could be our very first caller for this morning's program. And while we're waiting for some calls to go through, I noted that Dan and Tom were able to answer the query of June from a couple of weeks ago in relation to surrogacy of children and just what the situation is a surrogate, or in particularly in relation to a surrogate child who has been for whom there's been a parenting order made in favour of another couple, what their situation is in relation to superannuation, because there was a little bit of confusion in the matter that June was talking about. But it was very pleasing to hear that Dan and Tom were able to provide that information that we'd researched during the week. On another angle or another issue, I was just having a little bit of a look in the last few days at the penalties that have been meted out to the various major banks in Australia over recent years in relation to breaches of the law. And the major ones, of course, were the Commonwealth Bank being fined $700 million back in June 2018 for filing late transaction reports in relation to transactions of $10,000 or more that had been made through their intelligent deposit machines. And that was certainly an incredible fine at that time. That, of course, was eclipsed more recently by the fine that was given to Westpac Bank in similar circumstances for money laundering. And in that particular case, it was the largest fine in Australia's civil corporate history, and an eye-watering $1.3 billion. For 23 million breaches of the anti-money laundering laws. In between all that, there's been a $57 million fine handed out to the National Australia Bank, or more particularly to its wealth management divisions, Newless nominees and MLC nominees fined a total of $57 million. The one that appears to have been missing from all of this is the ANZ, and I was interested to read a report that the, I think from memory it was the Federal Police, had praised the ANZ for their scrupulous administration of those laws. So that was certainly very pleasing to see. But enough of that. We've got our first caller online. As we say, a very good morning to Barry. G'day, Barry. How are you today?
Assets.
Barry, hello. Barry, are you there? Barry, are you there?
Oh, yes, John. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm very well. I hope you are too.
I am indeed. How can I help you today?
I've we're self-funded retirees in our 80s.
Mm-hmm.
We own our own home.
Mm-hmm.
We have
Yes, go on.
Oh, yeah. We're asset rich, but income poor due to the reduced dividends and interest.
Mm-hmm.
Question is, can we donate and or transfer title of our rental property to our children at no cash money to us?
Mm-hmm.
And how does Centrelink view that? Because then we would qualify for asset qualify for pension.
Right. Okay. Well, look, Barry, it's probably a question more properly for Finance Forum on a Thursday morning at the same time, and you can certainly ring them back. But I do have a little bit of knowledge in this area, and the major problem that you're going to face is that if you divest yourself of an asset, then Centrelink will take that into consideration in assessing you for pension purposes. You're only allowed to give $10,000 per annum away without it affecting your pension to a maximum of $30,000 over 5 years. So it would really not be practical, because you're going to find that you probably won't qualify for the pension for some time. Do you have a financial advisor at all?
No, we haven't thought about it. It's just now mm-hmm. that we're being squeezed financially.
Yes. Well, look, what I would suggest you do is I would suggest that you give Finance Forum a call on Thursday morning at the same time, on the same number, and have a chat to the guys who present that program, because I do know that there are ways that it is possible to get the pension. Even if you are a self-funded retiree and receiving your income through superannuation, or you have assets in super, but I'm just not sure of the ins and outs of it all. So if you give them a call on the same number Thursday morning, Finance Forum, and I'm sure they'd be able to help you.
Okay, thanks very much for your time and your help. I'll do that.
Okay, Barry, all the very best. And the time on 4CRB just keeps rolling along. 12 minutes past 9, that's past 10 south of Tweed. As we say, a very good morning to Sam. G'day, Sam. How are you today?
Well, yeah, good morning. Thank you.
That's good. How can I help?
Oh, just recently in May, I had a brother died, and the will was left to the three in the family. But I was made executor of the will, another brother, but he's not fit enough to do anything, nor am I, but I left it in the hands of a lawyer. But they told me you couldn't contest the will. Family can't, you know, brothers and sisters can't contest the will. Is that right?
Well, it's from a strictly legal point of view, it's right, because a sibling doesn't come within the class of persons who can bring a family provision claim under the will. The only exception to that would be if one of the siblings was financially dependent on your brother at the time that he passed away. But outside of that, no. The only other grounds for contesting the will would be if there was a previous will which left the estate in different proportions, and there was some suggestion that someone had applied undue pressure or duress to your brother to change his will to the way he made it, then that certainly would be another issue that might lead to that. The other thing too would be capacity. So if at the time your brother made his most recent will, there was some question about his capacity, and there was an earlier will which left the estate in a different way, then it may be that there would be a challenge there. But that would only be brought by someone, in both those cases, the challenge would only be brought by someone who was financially better off under the previous will. So
right.
Otherwise, no, there is no basis upon which a sibling
can challenge. I thought we might be able to contest on the grounds that he was mentally unfit to, you know, to write our will, or somebody done it for him.
Well, that would certainly be grounds, but then you go back to, did he have a previous will?
Not sure about that.
Well, because
suddenly a heart attack. 78.
It depends what his previous will said. Is there any suggestion under his death certificate that there's any question about his legal capacity?
No, I don't think so.
Well, you as the executor of the will, don't forget, have a legal obligation to uphold the terms of that will. And if you, for some reason, don't wish to uphold the terms of that will, then you would need to consider whether you renounce probate. If the will is in fact invalid because your brother didn't have capacity at the time, then you may end up going back to the rules of intestacy. Did he have any children at all?
No.
Was single. He never married?
There's eight in the family, and only three got left to.
Right.
Two sisters and a brother.
Okay. Well, if he didn't have capacity and there were no other family members, then if the will was found to be invalid, then under the rules of intestacy, the estate would go to all of his siblings. But don't forget that you and the other two siblings who are receiving a benefit under the will are able to agree that, notwithstanding the fact that the will says it's going to go to the three of you, you can agree that it's going to go to the eight or nine of you if you wish. But that would require the agreement of yourself as one of the beneficiaries and the other two beneficiaries as well.
That'd be near impossible. Yeah, they don't talk. There's a family feud. You know, generally,
right.
As I say, whether the will is a family.
Well, the important thing about the will, Sam, is it needs to be the will of your brother. So it's not what the family wants. It's what your brother wanted at the time that he made the will. So if his wish was that the estate be divided between three of his siblings to the exclusion of the other five or six, whatever it is, then there's perhaps an argument that in the absence of any suggestion of lack of capacity at the time he made the will, then there's obviously a strong argument that his wishes in relation to the estate should be respected, and therefore the will should stand.
It's not an easy call, is it?
No, it's not an easy call, that's for sure. And of course, the other thing that needs to be considered, what's the value of the estate?
About $200,000.
Okay, all right. So it's probably not...
Go on. There's probably a lot more, but that we don't know about because we haven't got access to check your bank accounts and et cetera.
Yep.
And it's not that I want the money.
Mm.
It's just that I believe it should have been divided evenly amongst the family.
Yep.
It's not me being I don't want to get to be called a vulture.
I fully understand that. But unfortunately, you're in a rather difficult position because as the executor, as I say, unless there is a serious issue about his capacity at the time the will was made, and that would normally show up in the death certificate, the other thing that can be done to confirm that he had capacity would be, did he have the will done by a solicitor?
Well, maybe he did, but I've got another family that controls a lot of their money, and they're very, very, how would you say, closed shop about anything like that.
No, but the will that your brother made, did he make it with a lawyer?
I wouldn't have a clue.
What, you haven't seen the will?
I've seen the will.
Well, the will should have normally on the back of it the name of the law firm that made it.
Yeah, I will.
And also, it would describe the witnesses normally as legal secretary or solicitor or something like that.
Yeah.
So you could go back to the solicitor and make inquiries about the circumstances surrounding the execution of the will, and in particular, whether there were any issues as to capacity if you were really concerned about it.
Yeah.
All right, then?
Okay, then. Appreciate your help.
Okay, Sam.
Thank you.
Yep, you too. Yeah. All the very best. And the time just continues to march along right here on 4CRB. It's 19 minutes past 9. The Law Renew is the program. 5520888 is that phone number. As we say, a very good morning to Yvonne. Good morning, Yvonne. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
How can I help?
I've just got a query about... we have a member of our very close family that owns a unit, and we have also had put a lot of money into purchasing that unit. But my concern is that because of the situation she is in at the moment, with a partner not working that well, I'm very concerned that the body corp could be getting behind.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to know, we're trying to find out, we do ask this person all the time, how it's going, and I feel there's denial of really the situation, that it isn't getting really paid. How do we go about finding out just where this body corp position is? I know if we ring them, we know the company. I know that because of the
privacy legislation,
they may not give us this information. Mm. But our concern is that we, you know, if we feel we don't want to feel it's in the position where they're now taking over and can sell this beautiful unit.
Yes, you said that you put money into the unit.
Yes, well, we did at the time put a lot of money in because
when it was purchased, or how did this come about?
We couldn't go on the contract because they didn't have enough money to purchase it, the deposit, and the bank wouldn't allow us to actually go on the contract. It had to be down as a gift, and we went ahead and did this. Mm. I know we would get this back if it does get to the point of being sold, but we just don't want the body corp people being able to sell it up.
Well, my first concern is how you're going to get the money back if the property's sold, because if you've put it down as a gift, that's going to rely very much on the good graces of the owner of the property as to whether they will pay you the money back or not. That's the first thing that concerns me in what you're telling me. You know, so I would be certainly looking for some assurance from the family friend, you know, perhaps a provision in her will that she says that, you know, she gives this sum of money to you on her passing in recognition.
Well, she's only very young.
Oh, okay.
She's very
All right.
young.
All right.
Yeah. So, and it's just that, you know, I do not believe that this, because if I know the... even though she's working, I know that she's not in the position to be paying this. The actual unit is being rented, so I know the rent is paying the loan off, but I'm sure it's not covering the body corp.
Mm. All right. Is it being let through an agent?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so...
Yes, through the manager, actually. It's through the manager of the complex that's being rented.
And
yes.
Have you had any contact with the manager at all?
No, we haven't.
All right, okay.
Well,
look, unfortunately, I think the only way you're going to be able to do it is to get your friend to agree for you to speak to the body corporate, or alternatively speak to the body corporate manager, just to make sure that, because, I mean, it's not just the body corporate fees. Of course, you've got the rates that also need to be paid as well.
Yes.
So. You know, I think you really need to sit down. Do you live near to where this person lives?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think you probably need to go around and just, you know, sit down and say.
Yeah, we have had lots to talk about. We have had lots.
Just keeps saying, "No, it's all under control.
It's all fine," but we just don't believe that.
Hmm. Well, have you asked her if she'll let you speak to the body corporate?
Well, I can put it that way, exactly. Mm. That would be a good way to put it, that just to give us permission to talk to them.
Yes, because
that would be a good idea.
And I mean, quite frankly, if you've loaned her the money to help her out with the deposit, I'd be very disappointed if she says, no, I won't agree to allow you to do that.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
That to me would ring alarm bells if she's saying that she wasn't. Yeah. I mean, look, you can try and ring the body corporate, but I suspect they'll do what you say. They'll say, well, look, unfortunately, who are you and what right have you got to ask for this information, and we can't divulge anything to you because of the Privacy Act. And you very well may find the same result from the body corporate manager. So I think trying to sit down with your friend and just express your concerns and say, look, you know, we just want some reassurance that this is all under control. And, you know, I don't know whether your intention is that if she hasn't paid that you intend to help her further or whatever, but if you're going to do something like that, I'd definitely be getting an agreement in place. Hmm. All right, then.
Thank you.
Okay,
great.
Yvonne.
Thanks very much.
All the very
best.
Time on 4CRB is just 24 minutes past 9. That's past 10 south of the Tweed. As we say, a very good morning to Elizabeth. G'day, Elizabeth. How are you today?
Oh, well, thank you.
That's good. How can we help you today?
My query is I want to give my two grandchildren who live in the USA. A large sum of money. I'm 85,
mm-hmm.
and I want, and the grandchildren are 27 and 33,
mm-hmm.
and I've arranged to help my grandchildren in Australia already,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how I can give these two young men in Australia their money.
Right. Elizabeth, are you on the pension?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, you can. It's certainly quite easy to do. All you would need to do is get their bank account details and go into your bank and arrange to transfer the money to them. But before you do that, I would be making some inquiries of their parents, who presumably are your child.
Yes.
So I'd be making some inquiries to make sure that they're not in a vulnerable position where they're likely to squander the money or likely to be sued by someone, or they're in a relationship where their partner might be thinking about leaving them and making a claim. What sort of amount are you talking about, Elizabeth?
$50,000
each. Right, okay. And that's $50,000 Australian, is it?
Yes, and I'm a bit concerned at the...
Yeah, so what is it? It's around about 71 cents at the moment, so you're going to lose a little bit off that. So look, that I would first have the conversation with your child about what you want to do, and then directly from the children and whatever you do, the grandchildren and whatever you do, do not accept bank account details that come to you by email. You would need to confirm the bank account details verbally. So if you do receive an email that gives you the bank account details, you would then want to ring each grandchild and confirm that that is their bank account details, read them back to them to double check. And then you could go into your bank and tell them you want to transfer this money to your grandchildren in the United States, and the bank would be able to assist you to do that.
I see. Thank you very much. Mm. Yes, my daughter lives over there.
Yes.
And with her boys and husband.
Mm.
And she is to inherit the Australian property. So she seems to think she prefers to live there, although with this COVID business, I think she now realises she should be home.
Yes.
But her husband's occupation keeps the family over there.
Yes, yes.
But I'm just concerned as to the best way to do it.
Yes. The other thing, of course, Elizabeth, that you need to take into account is to make sure that in giving $100,000 in total to your two grandchildren, that you're not going to in any way compromise your ability to live in the manner to which you've become accustomed.
Yes, I understand.
So that it's not going to compromise you financially.
Yes, I understand that.
Mm. All right, then.
Good. All right, thank you for your advice.
No trouble, all the best, and nice to talk to you, Elizabeth. Well, that's probably about all the time we have for the program today. One thing I'd like to mention before I go is that with yesterday being a public holiday, I had to attend a meeting on the coast, and it gave me the opportunity to listen to 4CRB as I was driving and to hear Dr. Darryl Greger, presenting medical matters. And he interviewed John Gerard, Dr. John Gerard from the Gold Coast University Hospital, and Dr. Gerard is a specialist in infectious diseases. And as well as talking about Dr. Gerard's experience with Ebola over in West Africa, of course, they devoted a lot of the program to COVID, and it was certainly most enlightening and very, very worthwhile to listen to, particularly to remove a lot of the fear, I think, that's surrounding COVID, and also people worried about going to the doctor and that sort of thing. So if you have the ability to listen to the program again, I think from memory they do have them available as recorded programs that you can listen to on the internet by looking it up. So if that is the case, we can see what can be done. I know Oliver's looking at me quizzically there, so maybe that's not the case. But anyway, I might be getting too used to things like iView on the TV. John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, it's been great to be with you this morning for The Law and You. I look forward to being back with you again next Tuesday morning. But as always, until then, it's goodbye and God bless.